Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Welcome back to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast. Glory to God. We're so glad that you're here. And we're going to be concluding my interview that we did with Brian Johnson of South Dakota Apologetics. I mean, it's a South Dakota Apologetics. You need to look them up. They are an awesome, awesome organization. It's sdapologetics.com is their website, www.sdapologetics.com. And they have all sorts of free resources on there. You'll see what it is they do. They are challenging the status quo. Let's put it like that. They are challenging the status quo as far as the proofs being offered as so-called scientific evidence that is actually completely false. South Dakota Apologetics is showing people what the true readings are. And for an example, we're going to jump right back into the interview when I ask him about some of the discrepancy with the scientific methods of measuring date, time, stuff with carbon-14 as compared to what scientists learned with the Mount St. Helens explosion back in 1980 or 81, something like that. So let's jump right back into the interview with Brian Johnson.
On a big scale, based on Mount St. Helens, that showed us that these kind of sequences, these kind of formations like the Grand Canyon, can happen and probably do happen very, very rapidly, as opposed to the millions of years idea, which brings us back to a confirmation of the Bible and Noah's flood being true.
All right. Well, wasn't there also something about disproving carbon dating at Mount St. Helens or through the Mount St. Helens thing?
Well, yeah, and you know that's always been such a big sore spot with both sides of the camp, of course, because they'll say, well, what about radiocarbon dating, which is how you date rocks and get billions of years, or what about carbon dating, which gives you tens of thousands of years? And what they did is they did a radiocarbon dating on the igneous rock that came from Mount St. Helens. Well, obviously, we know how long ago that happened because we witnessed the event. But when they sent off the samples to be radiocarbon dated, what they came back with was billions of years. And different labs got different things. Like some were only 100,000 years, and some were millions, and some were billions. And it all depended kind of on which lab you sent it to. So not even the labs could agree how old these igneous rocks were. But even so, none of them were right.
You'll have to explain for our listeners, some of our listeners, what igneous rocks are.
Oh, sorry. Igneous rocks would be, well, something that you would find from a volcano. There you go. I mean, that's as simple as it gets.
Yeah.
You have the limestone, you have the sandstone. People are very familiar with that kind of rock. But the igneous rock is just something that comes from in a volcanic explosion.
Yep. Caused by a lot of heat.
Correct. So. And you, the geologist, would know all about that now, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, but some of our listeners aren't into like you and I are. when they sent these things off to the lab, and they come back with all the different, why are they like that? I mean, are they not using the same method? I thought that was the scientific method, you know, you do an experiment and it's repeatable by other labs to come up with the same result. Why couldn't these so-called secular labs, who are proponents of the long Earth, theme, why couldn't they even come up with the same results?
That's I guess the $64,000 question. I don't know. Like I said, they should all be doing And I'd have to think back now. Did I say radiocarbon dating or radiometric dating? I should have said radiometric dating if I didn't. But when they do their radiometric dating, which is how they date things that are millions or billions of years old, these labs should all be doing it the same way. And primarily, they really do. So when they get these competing ideas, there's always an out. Like the evolutionist or the old earther will always find some sort of a story or an out. And what it usually boils down to is contamination. That's probably the most, it is just the most used by all. Oh, it was contaminated. Oh, it was contaminated. I don't know how it could have been contaminated. They're all collected the same way, and they're all very carefully, the samples are all very carefully collected in a way to avoid contamination. Some of the ideas will be, well, the substance is coming from deep within the earth. And so what you're really testing isn't something necessarily from the surface, but something from deep within the earth, and that's what you're testing, and that's why you're getting these older dates. And once again, I think that's just a bit of a rescue device, because they don't like the fact that they don't come back consistently either. So there's always a rescue device. They'll have an excuse for it. But I think the easiest answer, really, the easiest answer is to look at it and just say, well, maybe there is something wrong with radiometric dating. Maybe there's just something we're missing here in terms of how it all happens. Because it's based on what's called uniformitarianism, and that is, the way it happens now is how it's always happened in the past. So there's a lot of built-in assumptions to radiometric and radiocarbon dating. And radiometric dating in particular is built on the assumption that the way things happen today are the way they have always happened in the past. But, of course, if things were different in the past, that would affect the radiometric dating a lot, like by millions and even billions of years. So you have to conform to the assumptions, but if the starting assumptions are wrong, then, of course, your ending conclusions will also be wrong, which is the argument from the creationist perspective.
And I think, and you'll probably know more about this than I do, because I'm just drawing from what I think I remember reading, where some of the trees that were naturally knocked over and buried under all this ash and all that, they went and took samples from these trees, which were just alive, a few months, maybe a year ago. And they came back dating like, oh, they're thousands of years old, through the carbon dating and stuff. Do you remember reading anything like that?
Yeah, so there were other studies too that were done now, and that would have been radiocarbon dating. Once again, I hope I said radiometric at the beginning of that, but if I didn't, then there's my fix. But radiocarbon dating is what you do to things that were once alive.
Alive, yeah.
And they're using the carbon within, because we're all carbon life forms, so they're using the carbon within the organism to date it. And you're right, they would find some of these trees dug that were underneath the ash and the soot, and they sent those off for samplings, and those were coming back with thousands and thousands of years, when we know that they were very recent trees of maybe hundreds of years. So they were off by at least a factor of 10 in their assumptions there. So, yeah, that's another really good example. And of course, they refer back to, well, it was contamination that affected that. Or if we're just being honest with ourselves, maybe the radiocarbon dating isn't as accurate as we think it is either. So,
Amen. Okay. Well, let's look at or talk a little bit, because we're not on video. we talk a little bit about dinosaurs and how they relate to the Bible. What can you share with us about that?
Yeah, well, in our last two podcasts, we did a lot of work with the dinosaurs, and I'll kind of sum it up. Here's something that's come about in recent decades, I'd say in the last few decades, but this has really come to light, and it's been causing a big stir, and that is dinosaurs, according to the old earthers, would be at least 65 million years old, period, end of story, nothing more to talk about here, let's just move on. And they accept it as an absolute fact, period, done. And so the dogmatic idea behind that is very tough to get through, but what they found recently is Mary Schweitzer, was doing a dig, and she came across a very large T-Rex thigh bone, and it was so heavy they couldn't get it out of the area they were in, which is actually not too far north of Rapid City, South Dakota, up in the Hell's Creek Formation area in the Montana area, North Dakota area. But she found this large thigh bone. They couldn't get it out, and so the other person that was working with her said, let's cut it in half. Let's haul it out that way. Because they tried to take a helicopter, and it was even too heavy for the helicopter to get out. Yeah. So he said, let's cut it in half, which is unheard of. You don't find something intact like that and then just cut it in half. But they did. And they cut it in half, and they got it out of the Hell's Creek area, and they took it back to the lab, and she started poking around in it, and she's like, what is this stuff? She's finding stuff, this material, that she's just, she can't really put a finger on exactly what it is. So they do more testing on it, and as it turns out, it ends up being soft tissue.
Soft tissue from a dinosaur bone.
Yes, correct. Wow. So it's collagen. So, you know, look at yourself and you see your skin and you see your, you know, there's tendons and there's muscles and there's that. Okay, that's all soft tissue because it's, well, soft. So pretty simple. It's all soft tissue. And so these bones had within the middle of them this soft tissue that she was, that she had found. Now, she reported it, and she actually got it through peer review, and it, and she has an article on it where this T-Rex had this presumably soft tissue in it, and it was absolutely hammered on by her peers. They were not happy with the fact that she reported that there was some sort of soft tissue. They thought it was, what's the word? What's the word, Pastor Bob?
Contamination. I was thinking of that because, well, they're probably mad because she cut it in half. You know, so that's where the contamination was.
They thought it was contaminated. So they thought that her DNA got on there, or I don't know, biofilms is what they called it. It's some sort of biofilm we won't go into. But anyway, they thought it was anything else but that because they understand the implications. Yeah. If it really is soft tissue, they knew. Like they're not stupid. They're just sometimes stubborn, and so they find the soft tissue within this T-Rex. They blast it. Someone comes out with another paper that says, "No, it was biofilms. It wasn't really this." And I think, and I'm speculating here, but I think she was a little bit hurt by that. Like her peers would turn on her, you know, and say. Basically, what they said was, you're an idiot, and you're doing bad science. Stop it. And I think, of course, she said, well, all right, fine. So she goes back out to the Hell Creek Formation, and lo and behold, what does she find but another bone? And this one is of a hadrosaur dinosaur. That's a duck-billed dinosaur, for those of you following along at home. And she takes absolutely to the T every precaution to prevent contamination of this newly found hadrosaur. They take it back to the lab, they cut it open, and lo and behold, what do they find but soft tissue within the hadrosaur dinosaur as well. And she posts that article. And so here she not only has one example, but now two examples of dinosaurs with soft tissue, presumably soft tissue in them. And they went back and corrected the T-Rex and said, okay, it wasn't biofilms. It must have been soft tissue. And the reason that's a big deal is because we have loads of studies that have been done on the decay rates of soft tissue. Why? Because we have soft tissue. We have it here in the real world, in the now world, where we can test it, whether it be like they believe dinosaurs came from lizards. So they can test the decay rates of soft tissue in lizards or in amphibians or in humans or in any organism here on Earth. They can test it and just see how long it lasts under certain environmental conditions. And they found, and they consistently have found, that over and over, every test they run, soft tissue will not last more than just a few million years at the absolute most, and that is only if it's kept at 0 degrees Celsius, which is freezing.
Okay.
However, these bones were not found in 0 degrees Celsius rocks. So the warmer you get, the faster that decay rate happens. It's no different than take a lump of steak and throw it in your freezer and throw another piece on your counter and see which one rots faster. It's the same, it's the same concept. So these dinosaur bones were kept in very, well, Montana, North Dakota, I know, gets to 100, 105 consistently for a few days out of the year. And anybody that does geothermal knows that once you get about 6 feet underground or so, the earth stays at a pretty constant temperature, never changes. It never gets freezing, and it never gets too hot. It stays at a constant temperature, which is about 55 degrees Fahrenheit. And under those conditions, according to these papers, that soft tissue couldn't even last a few hundred thousand years, let alone a few million years, let alone 65 million years. And so this has caused huge problems within the scientific world. And here's the problem. This is the issue we have now run into, and that is they refuse to believe that dinosaurs could be younger than 65 million years old. So the only question they're asking in all of it is, how do you suppose soft tissue lasts for 65 million years? I just don't know. I mean, we know it has to. I mean, those dinosaurs have to be 80 million years old or 65. They have to be. So that means the soft tissue has to last that long, 80 million years, contrary to every single piece of evidence we've ever studied on the decay rates of soft tissue.
Isn't there some other evidence that some of we discussed last time, but let's just rehash it, about dinosaurs and humans were alive at about the same time?
Right. So, once again, when you come to two competing ideas, or any competing ideas, 10 competing ideas, as it were, what you're trying to do is you're just trying to take the evidence that's in front of you, and where does it best fit? Where does it land in the grand scheme of it all? Does it land more towards this idea, or does it seem to flow more towards this idea? And that was what we saw earlier, to kind of bring this up again with the beginning of the universe. The evidence of Einstein's theory of relativity combined with the evidence that Edwin Hubble showed, now combined with a bunch of other evidences, firmly seem to fall on the feet of the universe having a beginning as opposed to the universe being eternal in the past. And that's just based on scientific evidence. That's where the evidence tends to fall the strongest, is towards this one idea as opposed to another idea. So we have the same thing here. Now that we have this soft tissue showing up, and we didn't talk about DNA has now been found, and these osteocytes, which are literally bone cells, have also now been found, and these bone cells have a nucleus, which of course contains the DNA. So it's on and on and on. We're finding even more evidence now that these dinosaur bones contain things even as far down as DNA. And DNA has a much, much, much faster decay rate than soft tissue does. And so you have a compounding problem for the old earthers. And that is, not only are we finding soft tissue in dinosaurs, we're finding DNA in dinosaurs, which we know through empirical tests decays even much faster than soft tissue does. So then, to lend itself more to that, if you do a little research, you'll find that we have pictures and things all over the world that concern dinosaurs and humans in the same place at the same time. You brought up the Paluxy tracks in Texas, where it shows a dinosaur track, and then there's a human footprint over top, fossilized with the dinosaur track. And so they have to try to find a way to explain that away, because that doesn't fit with their paradigm. Down in South America, there's a temple, and it has a picture of a stegosaurus on the temple itself. And they've tested this picture, And they've said it was done at the same time all the other pictures around it was done. They've tested the patina, and they said, no, it isn't a new addition. Somebody isn't playing a trick here. And it's a picture of a stegosaurus. Well, how did these people know what a stegosaurus looked like if they didn't actually see a stegosaurus? And even up here in a place called Moab, Utah, up on a wall, there's a pictograph of what's called a sauropod dinosaur, which would be like your brontosaurus or your brachiosauruses, those types of things. If you guys ever watch movies, there was a movie, Land Before Time, and it was like the long necks. They called them the long necks. And those are sauropod dinosaurs. Well, there's a picture, a pictograph of a sauropod dinosaur on the wall, and right next to it is also the pictograph of a man. And they've done work on the patina, and they were done at the same time, and they all date to about, they got it at about, I think, 800 to 1200 AD, which is very, yeah, very recent.
1200 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, right, done by the natives that lived in that area. And it shows that they apparently must have seen these sauropod dinosaurs. There's also a picture of one on the floor of an abbey over in England. Like, it's in brass. It's two sauropod dinosaurs with their necks interlinked, and it's in brass in the floor of a cathedral over in Ireland, Dublin,
really?
Somewhere.
Wow.
Yeah, the Ireland area. And then, of course, there was a more recent one that was just found in the Amazon in a cave, and it's a picture of a sauropod dinosaur surrounded by a bunch of hunters, and some have bows and some have spears, and they're apparently hunting this particular organism, and it's a sauropod dinosaur, and they've tested that, and all the tests come back that, yeah, it's legit. It wasn't recently put there. Nobody's playing a trick on anybody. So once again, we have this even more confirming evidence that's piling up to the fact that dinosaurs and man existed at the same time as one another, which, of course, falls right into a young Earth idea much better than it would an old Earth idea.
Well, also, why did it seem like they all died off at the same time? What major catastrophe could have wiped them all out at the same time?
Is that a rhetorical question, Pastor Bob?
Basically, yeah. that was a softball right there.
That is, man. Well, obviously, from a young Earth creationist perspective, we would go right back to Noah's flood,
yeah.
And that would be, bar none, the best example of why most of them were killed off, as most organisms were during that time. But it appeared that some of them walked off of the ark and actually continued to live for a little while longer afterwards, until food supply or whatever might have happened just caused them to die off completely. But yeah, of course, and it also explains a lot of what we find in the fossil record. When we find a lot of these dinosaurs, and they don't tell you this, but if you do a little poking around, you'll find these papers that talk about these dinosaur sites, and they'll find not just one, but numerous dinosaurs. So it's like, you know, a pool of fish, like you drop a piece of dynamite in the water and it blows up and a bunch of fish die, and they all seem to huddle together, you know, they all kind of form a what would be called a mat, if you will, and they end up at shore together, and there's a bunch of them laying there, and there's just a group of them all dead. Well, the same thing would be true of larger organisms, too. They'd get bloated, and they'd float, and they'd all kind of coagulate together, and then they'd end up in a point, wherever that area is, and they'd all be buried with one another, and that's what they find. They seem to find these dinosaur graveyards all over the United States, let alone all over the world. And in addition to that, and this is what they don't tell you, they usually find a lot of other organisms buried with them. Like, these dinosaurs are found buried with fish, and sometimes whales, and birds, and lizards, and owls, and all kinds of different organisms are found buried with these dinosaurs. Well, that would also make sense if there was a massive flood and a bunch of things died, and they would have all be buried together, because why else would a dinosaur be found buried close to a shark?
Yep,
you know,
that's right.
That kind of stuff. So, yeah, lots of really good confirming evidence, if you will, for the idea of, in this case, a young Earth and against the idea that dinosaurs are 65 million years old.
Amen. Well, Brian, I'm looking at the clock, and we're all out of time again today. Golly. We got to make sure that it doesn't take another year for us to hook back up. Maybe I'd like to have you come on maybe in a month or so, and we'll talk about some other things. How's that sound?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. There was a lot of other stuff that I wasn't able to talk about concerning stuff that we know is impossible for evolution, which I think a lot of people would be interested in.
Amen. Yeah, definitely I want to get into that. Okay. If someone wanted to reach out to you, maybe to ask a question, perhaps to ask you to come speak to their group or something like that, how can they get in touch with you?
A couple of ways, sdapologetics.com, and or we're very active on Facebook. Find us on Facebook at South Dakota Apologetics, and you could just ask us a question there.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule again today, and I just, like I said, if I wasn't careful, we'd be on, 2-3 hours, and my wife would definitely be upset.
and I could do it for 2-3 hours for sure.
Hey man, we'll have you back on very soon. We'll get this in the next couple weeks. We'll schedule something and keep this conversation going while it's fresh in everyone's minds, and everyone is, all the youngsters are getting ready to go back to school. Maybe we'll give them some talking points to discuss with their science teachers.
Man, that would be wonderful. And if anybody out there is listening and wants to call in with a question that we could discuss next time, please do that.
That's
and,
right.
Keep a list, and maybe we could talk about a couple of those topics on the next one, especially the kids. I love talking to the kids. So, yeah, if they have any questions, I hope they call you and let you know.
Either you can email me at brotherbob@ftfm.org and just put in the subject area, question for podcast, and that way it'll catch my attention, because I get so much email, I just start zooming through things sometimes, so I need something that will flag my attention.
Perfect.
So I appreciate your time, and folks, that's all the time we have for today. For Brian Johnson and myself, I want to say be blessed in all that you do.
Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this: your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts, share your unique insights, and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.